to read, just so it's recorded, some things that I already talked to you about. So I'm going to repeat myself a little bit, just so it's on the recording. Mm-hmm. And then I'll go in and start asking you some questions. And first I'm going to ask a little bit about your background, where you grew up, things like that. And then I'll ask you a little bit about your experience with fishing. And you can answer in Euxton or English, whatever you're comfortable with. And then I'll ask you a few questions about your time on the working group and your time with the test fish that was down here. But feel free to talk about anything you want. This is an open discussion, so talk about anything you want. Okay? There's no right or wrong answer. Okay. So today we are here with William Charlie Brown. Thank you for meeting us today. My name is Jen Peeks, and I'm here with my project partner, Alice Bailey. And we're in Eek, Alaska, and today's date is July 20, 2018. Just to share a little bit about myself, which Charlie, you probably already know, I moved to Bethel in 2004. And first worked at the Lower Kuskokwim School District. Then later I worked at the University of Alaska Kuskokwim campus in Bethel. Now I work as the Kuskokwim River Salmon Management Working Group or Working Group Coordinator and the Western Region Board Support Coordinator with Alaska Department of Fish and Game. And this is how I got to know you. These interviews are part of a senior project for an undergraduate degree in fisheries at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. These interviews are not connected to the Department of Fish and Game, and Fish and Game has no influence on what we're doing at all. Alice Bailey is currently an assistant professor of photography at the University of Virginia, and she was the former working group coordinator. And that's how she got to know who you were as well. The purpose of this project is to document your knowledge and your experiences with the Kuskokwim River salmon fishery and its management. And we really appreciate you sharing your stories. We have learned so much about the salmon fishery from you and want to help future generations learn from you as well. So we will not ask you to answer anything that you think is too personal or private. You can stop the interview at any time. These interviews will be archived at UAF, so they'll be available for anyone to listen to. They also may be available on the internet. So share only what you're comfortable sharing with, like, public audience. You do not have to answer any questions that you don't want to. Does that make sense? Okay. So this interview will probably take about an hour. Feel free to answer in whichever language you feel most comfortable with. Doing this interview is voluntary, so that means it's up to you. It's your choice if you want to keep going with this interview. You can decide to stop participating at any time. If you don't want to keep going with the interview, that's okay. That's your choice. Also, let us know if you need to take a break. We might stop periodically to change batteries or get a drink of water. If there's anything you need to be more comfortable, just let us know. We already went over the two forms, the consent form, and then also the form for the audio to be at UAF. Okay, you have any questions before we go with the interview? No? Okay. All right. So Charlie, tell me your full name in English and Yupik.
My of Charlie Brown, reside in Eek.
Do you have a Yupik name?
Yeah, Ahanahunek.
What does that mean?
That's my, that's the way I learned it from my grandparents before they pass on. That's their, that's their old name, probably their grandpa or father's name. That's their old name.
Okay.
They named me after him.
Okay. Were you born in Eek?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay. In this village or in a camp?
Yeah, in Eek.
Okay. When were you born?
11-17-43.
Okay, 43. Who were your parents?
My parents were Mary Cleveland before she got married to my dad, late dad. They changed their name to Mary Brown.
Okay. Did you know your grandparents? At all?
Yeah, I live with my grandparents.
Okay. What were their
names? When I was young.
Okay.
Young kid.
Okay. What were their names?
Their name was Stella. And my grandpa was Theodore.
Okay.
Cleveland.
From Eek as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
But they were born in a different place, like Apogok. That's where I learned.
Okay. Was that a camp up there?
They used to have places like fall time. They used to stay there for subsistence reason.
Okay.
You know, close to the resources like fish or hunting minks or like that.
Okay. Have you been back there? Do you know where that camp is?
Pardon?
Do you know where that camp is, that old camp?
The camp used, the fall camp used to be down there in Apogok.
Okay. So can you describe a little bit about this area, about Eek?
When I was a young kid, that old BIU used to be the biggest one.
Okay.
Not this one, but the other site on the other site. And the village used to be down, way down there. There are not very many. There was nothing here, up here, no housing and no roads. The path you used to get tired, you know. Houses were kind of small too. And that old church down there was the last one that stayed on the tundra before these all buildings were built. That's the one that used to stay like that building down there.
Okay.
And to me, that building down there was a huge building.
All right. Did everybody have boats when you were younger? Did everyone have boats?
Boats? Yeah, some got a few boats, you know. Yeah. They mostly used to travel with kayaks.
Did you learn how to kayak?
Yeah.
Okay. Who taught you?
My grandpa.
Your grandpa? How far down river would you go with your kayak?
To me, when I was young, they don't let us have a free time with kayak because we might have accident.
Okay.
But with someone, adult, to go with.
Okay. Would you ever travel to the ocean in your kayak with an adult?
No.
No.
like the prediction of the weather, it's unchanged. It's no time to, you know, it's changes. In them old days, we don't have weather predicting people, you know.
Right.
A few local guys who knows about the weather. They can tell us tomorrow it'll be a different weather.
Okay. So you said you grew up with your grandparents when you were young?
Yeah.
Tell me about your grandparents. What do you remember about them?
They used to, they're like teachers to me. They taught me. They taught me about bad things like not to take someone's properties or something like bad things like that.
Mm-hmm.
They taught us everything, bad and good.
Were you close with them? Did you have a close relationship with your grandma and grandpa?
Yeah, I was growing up with my grandparents. I stay with them in a separate building.
Okay. Did you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah. We were about 9 of us.
Okay.
I got 2 sisters and 7 probably 8 or 7 brothers.
Okay.
Sometimes I don't keep track of.
Did you grow up with them, or did they grow up in different?
Yeah, we grew up together.
Okay. When you were young, did you stay in Eek, or did your family move around during the year?
Yeah, when they used to move, first they used to move up to a spring camp sometime in April in order to start moving their stuff up there, build a tent, and then sometimes mid-April or late April, or we move to the spring camp.
Okay. And what did you do at spring camp?
We used to harvest muskrats in the old days. Muskrats and these migratory birds, you know.
Okay.
We dry them out. And sometimes we have whitefish pikes to dry them out for dried food.
Okay. How long would you stay at spring camp?
We stay at spring camp till last part of May.
Okay.
When everything is thaw up. Unique. In the old days, we used to have a wooden boat that lakes back. We sunk them in a water to close in them boards together.
Okay.
And then they let them soak for about a week or two. And then when we're getting ready to move down here, we just peel the water out and we come down here.
Okay. So how would you get to spring camp, like in April? How would you travel to spring camp?
We travel by duck team.
Okay.
There used to be some guys who got more ducks. They asked us to help us to move us to camp.
Okay.
And they do that.
How long did you have a dog team? How long did you have a dog team?
They keep them all summer, all winter, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how long they have, but when we're at a fish camp, we put our food in a smokehouse first, and then later on we dry out for ducks for winter.
So after spring camp, you traveled to fish camp?
Yeah.
Okay.
We camp here, we stop here for a day or two,
okay,
before we move down to another camp.
And your fish camp is located further down,
yeah,
the
Eek down River? There. On that first camp that you guys come up, mm-hmm, you saw. Yeah.
Yep, we saw it. And earlier you were telling me that that camp's been around a really long time.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about that camp?
The first time I know of that it was claimed by my grandparents. And we used that camp every year to camping down there, in closure to travel around, you know. They mostly used to have a horse to move around.
Okay.
There's not much motors now, not like right now.
Yeah.
They don't burn gas, you know, in them old days.
What kind of nets did you use? Or what kind of gear did you use for fishing?
I don't really know, but they used to... I heard some folks, they used to make their own nets, short nets. Like James Charles always described it. They let someone use it if they want to borrow it.
Okay. Let's see. What is the river like here down in your area by Eek? Can you describe the river? Can you tell me what the traveling on the river, what the river is like down here?
Yeah, to me, the way the folks that came in, it's like a snake river. It's going, you know, long ways. It's more traveling by river than winter time. It's only 5 miles down there,
okay,
by snow machine.
Okay. Has the river changed,
yeah,
since you were young?
Yeah, it changed from when I was young. We used to have a grassy place down there, maybe a tundra type place, but now I lost 4 to 6 feet of land every year.
Okay.
Corroded.
Sure. Has that changed the village of Eek too?
After that big earthquake back in 64, this seems like it's gone down a little bit. It seems like it used to be more elevated before earthquake.
So you talked a little bit about spring camp and some of the activities you did, and then fish camp. What other subsistence activities did you do growing up?
Yeah, the folks that I used to stay with in the old days, they used to harvest fish, smoke them, taking good care of them, like every day, like they don't want to spoil the fish, they want to smoke them all the time. And then when they're ready, they stack them up, stack them up first, and then they put in another fish to put more for toxin. You know, mostly like chums.
Okay.
And then after they done with drawing out fish, they wait for salmon, like right now.
Okay.
To pick them up, you know. In them days too, they used to salt them. And when they're dried up, they're not easy to spoil.
Okay.
For the rest of the year, you know.
Yeah.
In them days, they don't have freezers. Nothing to freeze them up, no electricity here in the village.
Yeah.
Only they used to have blazo type cook stoves, you know.
Okay.
And no stove oil around available. They used a wood stove to warm the house. Most all through the winter.
Where did you get your wood?
We collect wood around here from maybe you see the bluff down there, it's as far as down there.
Okay. So that's wood that's drifted down?
No, we just cut them up with axe, you know.
Okay.
In them days, we don't have chainsaw.
A lot of work. A lot of work.
Yeah. Probably lots of good exercise.
What sort of fish did you fish for? What kind of fish?
In at the beginning in June, you know, we start harvesting king salmon. First.
Okay. And then did you fish for other types of fish after the kings?
And then after that, we fished for chums.
Okay. How big was your smokehouse when you were growing
it
up?
It was not very big, probably. Probably 8 by 16, something like that.
Okay.
Or 9 to 16, okay. 16 feet.
Is the smokehouse you have now the same smokehouse when you were young, or is it a new one?
It's similar, but now we have a plywood, you know, sheets of metals, you know. In them old days, he used to collect, after the breakup, some logs that drift from upriver. They collect them and they make them buildings too.
Okay.
But now there's no more driftwood that come down to us.
Oh.
Not much snow, the reason why.
Okay. So what types of foods did you eat mostly growing up?
At the fish camp, we mostly eat like we collect from spring camp, half-dried we used to eat those rats, muskrats, half-dried, and pikes, and whitefish, and those number one king. They used to call them our food. Mm. Naka.
Naka?
Naka.
Naka. What's your earliest memory of fishing? What's your earliest memory of fishing? Do you remember your first time fishing when you were young?
I think I would know. Maybe when I was old enough to go out myself, you know.
Did your grandparents or parents teach you anything or tell you early stories about salmon? Or how do you respect salmon?
Yeah, they used to tell us that young in Demdesha when we were growing up, you have to be available for try to catch the kings in the season time. They don't wait for you. They call that like king season, like in June, that they're arriving from high seas. And then in Demdesha, you have to be trying to harvest while they're on the river.
Okay.
Otherwise, they don't wait for you. They just decline, go up the river somewhere. Okay.
So you had to be ready.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They used to get really, you know, they used to depend on the tides, you know, incoming tide. When it's early time, they get up early, get ready. We used to only fish on the tides, incoming tide.
Okay. Do you still fish on the incoming tide nowadays?
Yeah. On the low tide, there's hardly any fish.
Okay. How were you supposed to handle your fish? Were you taught how to handle your fish once you caught it?
We have to handle them like, you know, head and sometimes both of them.
How big were the king salmon when you were younger?
Salmon used to be a big one. They're big. Sometimes they're hard to lose. They just, you know, when they're wild, they just, sometimes they slam you down, you know. They were big, some of them.
Yeah. When you were young, did you have a job at fish camp? What were you supposed to do with the fish when you were young? Were you told to do a job when you're fishing?
When I was old enough to travel, I helped my grandparents, you know, fishing in the high tide. You know, depends on what they can handle for a day. You don't have to catch too many to catch a fish, you know. Otherwise, they'll get spoiled.
Okay. So tell me about once you caught the fish, what happened after you caught the fish in the net? What would you do with the fish?
What do you mean by that?
How did you process the fish after you caught them?
After we caught them, they take care of them. They cut them up for drying.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you ever help with that part? Did you ever help with the cutting?
Not really.
Okay. Was that mostly your grandma?
Grandma.
Okay.
And my mother.
Okay. So what type of gear did your family use to fish?
What gear? Yeah, now after I get old enough to use, I was using like 5.5.
Okay.
5.5 in a king season, we use like king gear.
Okay. So that would be like 8-inch mesh?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. Did they have 8-inch mesh when you were little? Did they use that size?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay. So, before there was like Fish and Game Management or Fish and Wildlife Management, did people who live here, did they somehow manage the fish?
Yeah.
How did they do that?
Yeah, they used to caution us, you know, them elderly. They used to call them the Quespak. You know, they don't want to waste fish, you know. What you fishing for is for yourself, you know. Not to excess fish, you know, to waste. That's how they used to taught us, these elderly folks. When we're done with the fish, you know, that's it. We just put away our gear. Even their good runs pass by. When they said enough, we got enough, that's it.
And every family knew how much was enough.
Yeah.
Okay. Were there any other teachings that you remember from your elders about the salmon?
Yeah, they used to discuss those fishes for next season so we could have more fish, you know. So that's why they respect the fish that arrive, you know. Mm-hmm. When you don't waste fish, you know.
So, Charlie, you did some commercial fishing? You did some commercial fishing?
Yeah, I used to commercial fish, yeah.
Okay. Do you remember when you started first commercial fishing?
I don't remember when they used to offer those regular licenses, like I don't know how much you used to pay, maybe like $15 license. Process and up there in Bethel, and that's how we used to get at the beginning of a commercial.
Okay.
We buy a regular license.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about what it was like commercial fishing.
We used to. Commercial fish in order to take care of our, at the beginning of housing and phone and lights to get up to make enough money to cover those.
Okay.
Sometimes we try to make more money in order to take care of our bills.
Was commercial fishing your main job, or did you have another job too?
After fishing, I went out to shoot for welder training for 9 months.
For welder training?
Welding.
Okay. So you're a welder?
Yeah.
Okay.
Certified welder.
Wow. Did you work out here as a welder in Eek?
After I complete school, I work a few, maybe, I forgot, I don't know how long, probably 5 or 6 years. Built a few boats, 3 boats for my sons.
Did you like doing that work?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But getting old, it's, you know, for your eyesight, it's kind of affecting your eyes. So I quit that.
Okay.
I gave it to my son.
So going back to commercial fishing, did you have a fishing partner?
Yeah, I used to have a partner. Sometimes my wife, my son-in-law, Eugene.
Okay. How many kids do you have? I didn't ask you that.
I got five.
Five
so
kids?
Far, yeah.
Okay.
They're all separate, married, and they still found their own.
Okay. And how long have you been married?
A lifetime.
A lifetime. All right. And you were telling me earlier that you met your wife in Eek.
Yeah.
Okay. She's from here originally.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Did people ever sport fish around here? We talk about sport fishing now. Is that something that ever...
Yeah, we sport fish ice fishing for pike in the fall time right after freeze up.
Okay.
When the ice is thick enough.
Okay. In the river, in the Eek River?
In the Eek River, about probably 3 or 5 miles upriver.
Okay. Do people still do that nowadays?
Yeah.
Okay.
Jen, I can hear the paper rustling. Does that matter? His paper?
Oh. Okay. When did you first learn about, like, state management, like fish and game? Or fish and wildlife. When did you first hear about them?
Back in probably early 60s or somewhere around there, I went to a training in Bethel. And during my training, toward the ending of my training, they sent us to Fairbanks. And we stayed there for about, one week. And then we completed the courses and they sent us home. And then later on that year, they hired me to station at Quijack for tower counting. Fish down in the Bristol Bay, and I worked there and stayed there doing the tower count on the Quijack River.
Okay. Tell me what that was like.
It was far away from my people, but they told me to come back that next year after I stayed down there. They stationed me at Queen Hawk for test fishing, and I worked there is a crew at a local crew bar. We were three of us down there camping by the mouth of the Canisto. That's how I begin my fishing game.
Okay. Do you remember who was with you at that camp?
I used to have other native people working like me. One was Alan Jimmy from Napakiak, and there was Frank Fox from Tunt, and there was a guy from Kuisluk, Paul Guy. He was a second advisor for biologist Reed Baxter, that white guy with the long beard, okay. You know. He was my my boss in them days.
So what type of work did you have to do?
In Quetzalcoatl, it was put me to count the fish that go up from the high seas. And the next year, I was stationed at Queen Huckley. They wanted us to, one time they wanted us to tag the fish. Tag the fish where they go and find out that time. So we tagged prior, before commercial opener. And then when the commercial season was opened, that first opener day, mostly got the tagged fish.
What years were you in Quijac?
I can remember. It's a long time ago to me.
Do you remember about how old you were?
I didn't either.
Okay. So you've worked with Fish and Game for a long time.
Yeah, I never quit since then. I used to have fishing partners from either from Anchorage or from Bethel. They sent them out as a crew to work with me. I used to drive my boat. They used my boat. And then that crew was used to record everything that we did on test fishing.
Okay. In Quinnahawk or?
Here.
Okay.
Down in mouth.
Okay.
On Kaskokwe mouth. By the mouth. Kaskokwe.
Okay. And they, Fishing Game, chose you and one other person to help with that test fish project. Right? You were the first to work on that test fish.
Yeah, I used to help them out with my boat. And then sometime later on, they don't want to send a crew here. So they hired me to test fish myself with someone here locally.
Okay. Who did you work with from here?
There was my... I used to have help, you know. I used to have help from my, but he passed on.
Okay.
He was to use their boat too.
Okay. So tell me what you had to do with the test fish. What was your job with the test fish here?
What do you mean?
Tell me how the test fish worked.
So we test fish, and then every day we used to report them back to the office, main office in Bethel.
Did you fish in one spot every time, or did you have different spots that you fished?
I used to have four stations. They were given to us to test fish right by the mouth of this Eek River, and drift out about 15 minutes. And then after that, you have to pass that bisque number two station. And then after you're done, you got to go to that sandbar with, right in the middle of the Kuskokwim. That's number three. And then last portion of that island back there where the green buoys used to park down there for navigating the barges.
Okay. And did you do that every day?
Yeah, every day, 7 days a week. Wow. For 3 months.
And was there a time of day that you would do it, or was it with the tides?
Yeah, with the tide.
Okay, with the high tides?
1 hour before tide, loose slack time.
Okay. Did you learn anything from doing that test fish?
Yeah, I learned from those crews that come down to process the test fishing. And that's the way I learned it. So when they hired me to test fish down, I do the same thing like these and those guys down here.
Okay. How to do that. Okay. Did anything surprise you from working with the test fish?
One time I was surprised when there was no fish in my area, those four stations. There was some belukas down below me, somewhere on the way end of, close to the mouth of the Kuskokwim. There were some belukas swimming around. I hardly catching fish that time. One particular year that time.
Is that common to have belugas around there?
But there's no more belugas down there. And then after that, they opened the commercial fishing. The people that fish on the other side of the Kuskokwim, they catch more. And the rest of them that fish on this side, there's nothing, hardly any catches. The reason why was, I thought it to me, in my opinion, was belukas disturbing those fish.
Do people around here hunt belugas?
They used to hunt them.
Have you ever gone beluga hunting?
No. Is there any possibility to have some help for these folks that don't make money that they used to make out of commercially?
Like through the disaster fund?
Yeah.
I don't know. We can definitely look into that, though. I can try to find some information for you. I don't know how that works. But I can definitely ask around and try to get some more information. How many people do you think still have fishing permits here?
I don't know. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't want to guess.
That's okay. When commercial fishing was big, did most families have somebody that commercial fished?
Some of them there, the guys who have fishing permits, used to go out there fishing, you know.
Yeah. Would people mostly fish around here, or would they go down to Quinnahawk to fish?
Yeah.
Or both?
Yeah. But some folks that don't make money and that don't have jobs, it's difficult for them to buy gas and everything.
Yeah.
So that's why I've been asking for that bicycle to open it. So a couple of years so far I went to Board of Game and testify for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And finally they understood it's a non-producing river.
Yeah. What does bicycle mean in English? Do you know what bicycle means in English? Does it translate?
Bicycle, to me it's like after you eat, you, that's how I understand it.
Okay.
That's the native way.
Okay.
Bicycle.
Okay. So you've been on the Kuskokwim River Salmon Management Working Group for quite a few years.
Yeah.
Do you remember when you started with that group?
I don't remember.
No? Do you remember how you got on that group? Did somebody ask you to join, or?
No.
Okay.
No idea.
Well, has that group changed at all since you've been on it?
I don't know. I can't describe it.
Okay. What was it like when you first got on that group? What were your thoughts about it?
To me, before that time, you know, the folks that are upriver and downriver, they don't agree each other. You know, sometimes there's some, you know. So they don't really agree with something. Now it's changing. There seems like they're more like understanding each other now.
Okay.
Like at the beginning they were kind of, you know, they're not agree.
Okay. Did you know what things were like upriver when you were younger? Did you know about the river above Bethel? Had you spent much time in that area of the river when you were younger?
Yeah, previous years ago, before this $400 fee was processed upriver, we used to hunt up the moose hunting in the fall time.
Okay.
And we used to have go out there without anything.
Okay.
And after that they said non-members, they have to pay like $400 fee in order to hunt up there.
Okay.
So we quit hunting over there.
Okay. And with that, you'd go by boat?
Yeah.
By boat. Okay.
Some one time we went 400 miles. We went way up there. We saw a fish fishing came capping up the side, I don't know. I forgot those two guys, they're brothers.
Okay.
They used to meet us every year. We gave them leftover grubs and seal oil and stuff that we'd want to bring them back.
Okay.
They used to be real excited. So they like oil, seal oil. They love, want us to bring them seal oil next time we come. that cabin was built, I think, built under Rebaxter in them days too.
Okay.
The cabin. We up there.
What do you think were the big issues about the fish when you first started with the working group? What were people's concerns?
To me, sometimes, you know, this June is here. It's a drying weather. No bucks around to lay eggs on your drying fish. We used to fish like in short time, you know, try to collect the fish, harvest fish in a short time in order to dry them up at the same time, not later on, but in a, like one time, you know, get more fish, and then your family says enough, so they will cut them up, and then they cut them up, they dry them out in June. When June is almost done, they're done. They put away their gear. They're drying out. They smoke them out. They're ready for picking berries, like right now. That's how we used to fish in them before Fish and Game controlled the Kuskokwim.
So that changed with Fish and Game.
Yeah. We used to have our own Fish and Game elders, you know. They used to caution us, you know, to respect everything that swimmed by.
Okay. What else would those Fish and Game elders tell you about the game and fish? What other teachings would those elders tell you about how to fish or how to hunt?
By what do you mean?
You said you had your own fishing game elders.
Yeah.
What sort of things, other things, did they teach you about how to fish or how to hunt?
Yeah, they used to be handle fish that you catch, taking good care of them, not to spoil them, not to waste them. That's how they used to advise us. You have to get what you need, that's it.
Okay.
You don't have to get not to waste what you got. Reserve it for food. That's how they used to advise us to respect the season.
Okay. And was that the same, did they tell you the same things for game, like moose and caribou?
Yeah, moose too, yeah.
Okay.
A few years ago, we used to have caribou roaming around close by.
Huh.
And they used to advise him not to play with them and not to hurt them or anything. And now they don't hunt them all the time. They just go out there and watch and take pictures.
Okay.
That's how they want them to. They don't want not to play with them.
Okay. Do you still go out and hunt caribou in the winter?
Yeah, sometimes, yeah. I don't hunt last year because of no snow. And some places up there is different than this river. It don't freeze up right away like down here.
Okay.
More current up there.
Okay. Have winters changed since you were younger?
Yeah, change a lot.
Yeah, what's different from when you were younger?
The different is late freezing.
Okay.
We used to have frozen up like in October. It's safe enough to travel.
Mm-hmm.
And right after October, November, we start traveling to at the village of Bethel. But now it's different.
Yeah.
Don't wait till probably December, January.
Yeah. How does that affect your subsistence schedule?
Yeah. I can't explain that.
Yeah. But it's different.
But sometimes it's hard to, it's not safe enough to travel around.
Okay, just a few more questions here, Charlie. Looking at the fishery now, and the salmon now, what do you think could make the fishery more successful? Like, what do you think could make the fishery better? Do you have any ideas?
Yeah, to make it better because of that bylock they allow us to fish on that bylock.
Okay.
No closure. Even there's not much fish like open water,
mm-hmm.
like Kuskokwim. Sometimes they don't catch enough to take home, but that reserves the freedom.
So with the restrictions we've had the last couple years, how has that affected people with their fishing?
For drying out fish, it's kind of late for, like we used to, it's different,
yeah.
You know, dry. Sometimes we get rain, moist. We lose our sunshine weather for drying.
So thinking about the Kuskokwim and the salmon and all the other fishing game that you rely on, what would you want the younger generation to know? Or what do you want to pass on to them about the fish and game resources?
Yeah, to me, I just want them to have like I used to back in days. Not to waste your catches for the future. And one time when I used to go up, travel up river, in lake. I saw some containers way up there. I report them to the game up there. I didn't like those where the spawn up river. So some of the folks after they heard this, they didn't like it. They didn't want to disturb the spawning areas, even for blackfish that we eat. They want it to be clean, you know. That's how those old folks used to tell us when we were young kids, not to take someone's netting, you know. Leave them alone where they belong.
Is there anything else you'd like to add or share?
Yeah, I hope everything's cooperate each other like we did in the older days, to respect each other, you know. That's my advice, you know.
Well, Charlie, we really want to thank you for taking time to visit with us. I know it's berry picking season, and and there's lots of berries out there. So thank you for visiting with us. This was really a wonderful time to listen to your thoughts and your experience out here.
Yeah, since they put me to these fisheries, these tribal councils, they want us to bring their problems whenever they have questions. I brought them out with the one way to present them. So I told a group not to ask me. It's not my my idea to bring it out. It's someone's, they want me to brought it out. That's the way I represent these councils too.
Yeah.
Even they're kind of tough to say, you know. So I same with other organizations. So I'm with the AVAC too, they want the ideas brought out to them too.
Being a representative can be a tough role sometimes.
Yeah.
It's a hard job.
Sometimes I had a tough time, you know, trying to get things brought them out, kind of not to avoid bad words, bad language. That's how I was taught. You to avoid the bad language, trying to fix them, maybe more brighter.
Well, Koyana, Charlie, for everything that you do for your community and for your family and for people along the river, you've been involved for a really long time and know a lot about the river and how things work, and you sharing that information is really important.
Yeah, some of these elderly folks, they appreciate my work with the group, you know, game or organizations, that they support me to keep up my work. But time changes, you know. Sometimes Maybe I'm thinking to retiring from the council or other organizations, you know, to take care of my family.
Yeah.
So I ask these councils to, they can find someone else that can speak good language, you know, English language, that can broaden them out. Every time my term was up, they always re-elected me.
They want you to stay on.
So for some reason why, I don't know.
All right, Charlie. Well, again, thank you very much for taking this time. Mm. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, it was wonderful.